Welcome to Threads of Enlightenment. As usual, once our guests appear and has presented to us, we welcome them into the family, and then we turn it over to them for them to tell us what they have created. It is our honor to have Joyce here because she has an extensive resume that I am glad to have her talk about. So, Joyce, I want to welcome you to Threads of Enlightenment, and thank you so much for coming.
Oh, you're very welcome, and thank you for the opportunity, Ken.
Oh, my pleasure. I want you to tell the people about your books. I know you're an author. Talk to them about all of the things that you have produced so far.
Okay. Well, I am the author of 10 books, nonfiction, 10 nonfiction books, and I wrote my first book in 1997. That book is entitled Line of Serenity, and it is a memoir. I am the oldest of 7 kids. My oldest brother passed away in 2013. He had lung cancer. But all of us, the 7 kids, we all adore each other. We have what we call sibling Sundays, Zooms, every other Sunday. Because I live in California. I'm born and raised in Detroit, Michigan, and all my siblings were there. But one of my brothers moved to Massachusetts about 35 years ago or so. And so then another brother passed, but he passed on. I told you about that one. He passed on. And so some were in Michigan and one was in Massachusetts, and then I'm in California. So we just had the first Zoom, on August 1st. And that was the first time in 30 some years that I had seen all of my siblings.
Wow.
You know, but I had already, you know, I had done Zooms with them individually. We had the families, and now we're having it every other week. So I feel like a mother hen.
That is awesome.
But yeah, so, and we all adore each other, like I said. And so I wanted to write the book about how our parents raised us as like a tribute to them, but more to for the posterity, for the future generations, so that they would know how we were raised.
Yeah.
We were raised in such a warm, loving, tender way. We were poor, but we did not know that we were poor. We were rich in love, attention, and affection.
Nice.
And family.
Yeah.
And so my husband and I have been together since we were 13 years old. We're both 78 now.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. We'll celebrate 55 years of marriage on June 3rd.
Wow. That is
and
awesome.
So he adored my parents. You know, like I said, we were 13 years old. So he adored my parents. And my brother that passed away was his best friend.
Oh, wow.
As a matter of fact, he met him before I met him. Pap is my husband's name. Everybody calls him Pap. So Pap had left his tie and socks on the playground. And so my brother found them and brought them home, and Mama put them in the buffet drawer. And I was visiting some relatives, and Mama called me and asked me if I knew where brother had put Pap's socks and tie. And so, yeah, I knew where he put them. And so then that was that. And so months later or whatever, I don't even remember. It was all so long. But then we started, you know, girls were telling him that I liked him and all that stuff, you know, so. We started being girlfriend and boyfriend. And that was 13. And then we got married when we were 23.
Wow.
So
that is a beautiful story.
But when I wrote the book, because he adores my family, he wrote the first, I think, like 23 pages of it. And I had finished the manuscript, Ken, and I didn't know what to call it. And he said, all of y'all have that line of serenity running through you. And I said, whoa. And so that's what the title of the book is, Line of Serenity.
Wow.
And it's 167 pages, 22 pages of recipes, because food is very important to our family. Always has been. Big deal. It's even a picture of a big spread, a plate of fried chicken, macaroni and cheese, and all that on the cover of the book. So, and then there are 22 pages of photographs of my ancestors.
Wow.
So because I put those in there because in the future, girls will have babies that will look like Aunt Lou or Uncle Oscar or, you know, Grandma Rose or, you know, Uncle George or whatever, you know. So those pictures are in there, too. So and it's for posterity. It's for future generations to come. That's why I wrote it. And I people read it and they said, you should get this published. So I sent it off in to reputable publishing houses and they rejected it. So I did self-publishing.
Well, I did the same too. And then after I did it, then people started buying it and a couple of companies came after that. So
It goes from 1944 to the year that I was born. And it goes to 1977, the year that our mother passed on. So it's got all that stuff from there about wringer washers and ice boxes where we actually have the block of ice in the bottom of the refrigerator, you know, that kind of stuff, all of that.
Let me ask you something, Joyce. How did you come up with the idea of doing this for posterity? What transpired to cause you to do that?
You know, it is in my fiber. I have so many things in this house, and so does Pat. We have so many things in this house that are like 30, 40, 50. Our bedroom set is 55 years old. That's the set that we had when we got married, you know. So, and we keep things. As long as they serve the purpose and serve it well, we keep it. And I have clothes that are 25, 30 years old. I have that I can still wear.
That's the important thing, is that you could still get in there.
Well, I'm not going to keep them if I can't wear them. So I can still wear my wedding dress.
So you just wanted to do that because the reason why I ask is because the book that I wrote, Threads of Enlightenment, was I wanted to give that to my sons because I was learning. I was on my journey learning about principles, and I wanted to deposit it into them about self-love and all the different things that were important that I saw that was necessary in order for someone to really become mature human spirit. And so I wanted to put it in a format that I can offer it to them as a present. And so that was Threads of Enlightenment. And I wrote it specifically for them, and then I got it published, and people were attracted to it and purchased it. So it was really interesting. So you have this family, wonderful family. You paint a beautiful picture. I love the fact that food is a centerpiece of the family, because that was a centerpiece within ours. And we would have some of the most beautiful feasts.
That's what we call them. We call them feasts too, Ken.
I'll tell you something, Joyce. We would go on fast. My mom and dad, we do these 7-day fasts and all these kind of crazy things. And then at the end of the fast, we're cooking for 2 or 3 days to come off of a fast. It's just ridiculous. Wow. That's not how you're supposed to come out off of a fast. But man, we lay down some feasts and we were eating like you would not believe it after coming on a 7-day or however long it was that we were fasting. So we used to love to do those fasts. So.
And I was the baker in the family. I made not just the baker, because I did desserts for, you know, cakes, cookies, pies, banana pudding. My family would line up when I made banana pudding.
Oh, wow.
They would literally line up with cups and spoons in hand to get the banana pudding. And I could not visit Detroit if I did not make a banana pudding. So that was one of the demands that they made on me. And I made fried apple pies and peach cobblers and rum cake, all of that kind of stuff.
Next time, just invite me. I'll come, you know. So here you
go. I love to cook.
So do I. I love to cook. That's how I express myself as well. So you have all of this love in the family and from your parent and the sibling and everything. As you move forward, you wrote this book, and with your husband pitching in as well. How did you transition into all these other books and stuff like that? How did the second book come about, and what made you decide to go about doing that?
Okay, now I can go through chronologically.
Yeah,
So
walk me
in
through.
1997 was Line of Serenity. 2003, I wrote Mother's Dozen, An Easy Recipe for Raising Great Kids. And that one is 48 pages. And so it really was upsetting to me to see these young mothers being held hostage by the tempers of their toddlers. It just absolutely amazed me how they could. Oh my God. And so I wrote this book, and the foreword, and I sent that off to reputable publishing houses, and they said they wouldn't publish it unless it was written by a psychologist or a celebrity or a minister or something like that, they told me. So I said, who wants to raise their kids the way that celebrities raise their kids? Now, not for me. And so I have a cousin who attended this one of these biggest the biggest churches out here in Los Angeles, Fame Church. And I emailed the I called him first, the minister, and I emailed him the manuscript and asked him if he would consider writing a foreword for the book. And he emailed me back the most fabulous foreword for this book. Do I have time to read it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. He wrote this: Mother's Dozen is a handbook of excellence in raising children. It systematizes the rules passed from generation to generation regarding preparing children for the world to come. It involves tough love. It encompasses touchy-feely. It establishes fences that keep the wolf out and the sheep safe. It is common sense, the most uncommon thing in the world, particularly in this present age of negative imaging and self-raised, quote, rugrats, unquote. The quest is not for something new, but for something substantial. It is here. Every line brings an aha experience. The head nods yes, the will prods action. Well done, well done. Reverend Cecil L. Chip Murray, First AME Church, Los Angeles, retired. That's what he said
Wow,
about.
that is awesome.
I if I hadn't been sitting down, Ken, I'd have fallen down. Because that forward was absolutely
Yeah,
just amazing to me.
that's a
And it's
impressive.
only 48 pages.
Wow. Well,
Then in 2008, I wrote The Best Way to Keep a Man is to Let Him Go. Again, I was observing the way that these young girls were fronting off their men in public, and just disrespect, and that's no way to keep a relationship healthy. And so they didn't understand, in my opinion, they didn't understand the dynamics of keeping a relationship together. And so that one is 64 pages, which includes 22 pages of the same recipes that are in Line of Serenity. Then in 2009, I wrote two books. It's 48 pages, The Vision, telling kids that they can make the world a better place. And again, in 2009, Jet Black and Her Seven Friends. So that one is a fairy tale. As I said, I'm 78 years old. When I was coming up, there was no such thing as black fairy tales. So I wrote one myself when I was in my early 70s. So I wrote this one, Jet Black and Her Seven Friends. And it's a fairy tale. She goes to sleep and she is very tall for her age, and she gets teased constantly and doesn't want to go to school. So she goes to sleep and is taken on this magical journey where she meets seven friends. And you gotta buy the book to see what happens to her. 28 pages, hand illustrated in color. The way that came about, Ken, was really providence as well. I had finished the manuscript and I wanted to get it illustrated. So I was working at Kaiser Permanente as an executive assistant, and I was talking to one of my coworkers, an Asian young lady by the name of Alice Malloy Chang, and she said to me, I have always wanted to illustrate a children's book. And oh my God, kid, you just don't know what that, it just threw me for a look. It's like the hand of God just, ooh. So I gave her a few pages, and oh my God, she made Jet Black and Her Seven Friends come to life. Her illustrations are so gorgeous until it just. So then that was 2009. I wrote Jet Black. Then in 2011, I wrote Dear Bully, a collection of poems about bullying. I was really disgusted to learn this new word that they coined. I don't know who they are, but they coined this word for kids who commit suicide as a result of bullying. Bullycide. Isn't it? I think that is horrible. So I wrote this book. It's 25 poems and it's 52 pages, because Each opposing page is a graphic of what I'm calling no-no words, like malice and disrespect and bullying and stuff like that, you know. And the poems are short, and they're written for children. And then in 2013, I wrote My Simple Quotes to Live By, and that one is 90 pages. And one of the quotes that I coined was chosen as a out of over 5,000 entries. So they wanted 12, you know, for a calendar, they had to have 12. So they chose mine as one. And that quote, I put it on social media regularly. It's better to die chasing a dream never caught than to die never having chased the dream. And I put that on for people to encourage people to chase their dreams. There's so many dream squashers out there, people that will tell you, that's not possible. You can't do that. You shouldn't do that. You ought to do it this way. You ought to do it that way. It's your dream. You chase it the way you want to, because it'll be very pitiful for you to be laying on your deathbed saying, I wish I'd have done this. I wish, if you can say, I wish I'd have done this. I wish I'd done that. If you land on your deathbed, imagine that. Laying on your deathbed and all these things that you haven't done, and you would be regretful. So just do them.
I agree.
Then
I totally agree.
In 2014, I wrote A Breast Cancer Journey to Greater Joy. In 2011, I was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer. And there was no fear, only faith. I wanted to, honey, when I got to the hospital, my blood pressure was 123 over 53 or something ridiculous like that. They were amazed because I was going into surgery and my blood pressure was stable. Oh, my God. I was so calm. I felt like I had been invaded by an alien and I just wanted it out of me. So I wrote this book, A Breast Cancer Journey to Greater Joy, Taking the Fear and Mystery Out of a Breast Cancer Diagnosis. And that's what I wanted to do. Take the fear and mystery out of it.
Let me talk to you about that one, Joyce, for a minute, because I know a lot of people, a lot of women deal with this particular issue, because I have a friend, a young woman, that's dealing with it, several of them, actually. Walk with me through this. Once you got the news, how did you respond when you got the diagnosis that this disease was upon you?
I was not afraid. All I wanted to do was to get it cut out. And so I had the stage 2, and I had the surgery, and I had radiation. I did not have chemo. And Ken, let me tell you, guess what date I don't even want you to guess. I had my last radiation therapy treatment on 11/11/11 at 11 a.m.
Wow.
And even to this day, I look at the clock. It happened to me today. I looked at the clock and it was 1:11. I'll look at the clock and it'll be 11/11. It happens to me all the time. I feel totally blessed. Then in 2000, go ahead. No, you said that you wanted to talk some more about the breast cancer.
I wanted people to get, because my listeners, they've heard me said many times that people need to find a mission statement about their life. And I wanted you to tell them what your mission statement is, because it, as you speak about all these books, I want them to see what's driving the fact that all of these books are coming out of. What is that mission statement that you have? You said, I write books to inspire people on their journey to make the world a better place. That is
That's
a powerful declaration of faith. People hear me say it, because I had you pull at those books because I wanted to go back to that to show people that that's your goal that you had set in your life. And here you are pumping out all of these books. And I try to tell people it is important that you find that definition that we want to govern your life by, and then take the corresponding actions to fulfill it, so that you can be, as you said, chasing your dream. Because Joyce, I worked in skilled nursing facility, and I had conversation with people in their 80s and 90s that had lots of regret. And so it is a painful place to sit to someone at that age and hear them talk about their regrets. And you ask them why they didn't pursue it, and it's always based on fear. You know, I was afraid, I had this to do, I had that family and so forth. But I believe that you can do all of that. You could have family and all of it and still chase your dream. And we need to remember that and not put all those things, like you said. That's a powerful quote that said about chasing your dream, it's better to do that than not to.
Yeah, I posted on, and it's a gorgeous picture. It's a flyer. You know, I am a retired executive assistant, mm-hmm. so I'm very familiar with the workings of computers. I'm not an expert, but I'm still familiar with them. And I can make pretty nice graphics, nice looking graphics. And this one that I put the quote on is it's a purple background and it's got bubbles all in the background. And then the words, it's better to die chasing a dream never caught. First it says, are you chasing your dreams or chase your dreams? One or the other I put up there. It's better to die chasing a dream never caught than to die never having chased the dream.
That is profound stuff. I wish people that are listening to this podcast will pursue those words that you spoke.
Yes.
Because it will enhance your life. It will change your outlook as to how you look at things. You will operate a little happier. You'll see changes that are physical, spiritual, and mental, soul, everything. You will see changes as you pursue.
And
those,
if people in your life don't like it, then you have to put them on the sidelines of your life. Don't kick them out of it necessarily, but put them on the side, you know, and while you pursue your dream.
Yeah, it's your dream, isn't
it? You must do.
I tell them I think society controls us in this stuff in several ways. I tell them that normality is that line, the invisible line by which every time we get close to it, they'll say to you, "That's you know, it's not normal what you're trying or thinking of. So get back to normal." And
no one has really
defined to me what normal means. So you ought to jump
and
over that line.
It's like people will say to me, I don't look 78 and I don't. Well, my whole thing is I don't even know what 78 is supposed to look like. And I don't know what it's supposed to feel like. I tell you the truth, Ken. Mm-hmm. I am 78. I don't feel any differently than I did when I was 28.
Yeah.
I do not have aches and pains. I can bend down and touch my toes, not bending my knees. Mm. I feel wonderful. I am not on medication. Mm-hmm. I just had cataract surgery. Mm-hmm. And I told my husband, I told Pat, we don't call each other husband and wife. I told Pat to call me double E now, eagle eyes. Boy, I can see for miles, clearly.
That is awesome.
And my last book, Ken,
go ahead.
I wrote in 2015, and that one is called The Limitless Golden Rule, 21 Ways to Use the Golden Rule in Your Life.
Yeah.
And I have established this Golden Rule Challenge. Mm-hmm. Go to YouTube, the new Golden Rule Challenge, 10/25/2021. Mm-hmm. I put the date on when I put stuff up on YouTube. So I'm on YouTube. I'm on Twitter. I'm on TikTok. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram.
I'm going to put all of those links on your page so that they can get to all of this that you are talking about. And Joyce, one of the things I tell people because I always encourage people to buy the guest books by their material, because I feel that when you are reading it, you're having a private session with that individual, with that writer. Your energy that you're exchanging, the thoughts, the wisdom, the relationship, all of that stuff is being exchanged as you get into your comfort zone with your cup of tea, your coffee, your water, your juice,
Ken.
Whatever it is. And so you're having this one-on-one conversation. So I suggest that you guys buy the books, purchase several of them, because they're small reads. You can give them to other people as gifts so that you can point them to the path that they need to be. These challenges, the all of the different things about bully. If you know that there's a child that is being in that situation, give them buy a couple of books and give it to a couple of kids as presents so that they can understand what it is and how to manage it, and so that they can be victorious in their life as, you know, as we begin to move. So, Joyce, you have written all these beautiful pieces, and all of them I see are focusing on the human spirit, the ability to overcome. Tell me about some of those things. I know cancer is one of them that you do. Tell me about some of those beliefs that you had to overcome as an individual. I know you said in the onset that no fear, lots of faith. So tell me, was there anything that caused you I don't want to say get scared, but kind of like thought, you know, I need to conquer this belief. Any of those things that you encountered in your life, and how did you get out?
Well, you know, you have to understand a little bit about my parents. I was 33 years old when my mother passed on.
Mm-hmm.
And before I even realized that, I never, ever in my life saw her over the top angry. Never really even saw her angry or lose control. Never.
Mm-hmm.
And my father, neither one of them. They both were calm people.
Mm-hmm.
There's a chapter
mm-hmm.
in Line of Serenity, and it's entitled The Calm. That is what I remember most about our home.
Yeah.
We had 9 people, 7 kids, 2 parents, and a Doberman Pinscher puppy. All of those people, no hollering and screaming, no out of control anger.
Wow.
Enough that, yeah. She passed on before I even thought about that. I never even gave it a thought, but I never saw her angry.
Yeah.
And the calm. Now, I stayed on the honor roll at school. So what I had to do was block out. You could not ask 6 kids and 2 adults and a dog to be quiet while you study, while you did your exams,
yeah.
you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So I had to block that out. And to this day, Pap still is amazed that I can block out noise. I can block out commercials. I can block out all this stuff. So that's the way that I was raised.
Yeah.
You do not. Worry is a learned behavior.
Yes.
And fear is a learned behavior.
Yes.
I didn't see that.
Mm-hmm.
It was not modeled for me. And it goes into my extended family as well.
Wow. That is a precious gift that was given to your family.
Yes.
By your parents.
And don't I know it.
Yeah. That was a precious gift. It saved you guys from a lot of heartaches.
Yes. That's the truth.
You know.
That is the truth, Ken. Oh, my God.
So,
is it ever.
That is awesome.
And that's what I'm saying. My mission statement, you already read that, but I told you about what I posted on TikTok recently, and with a flyer of all the covers
yes.
of all the books.
Yes.
The covers
yes.
are beautiful, too.
Yeah.
And that it says, the books at goodshortbooks.com will pave the road for you to have a smoother ride through life.
And that's it. That's we all want to have that smoother life. And I believe this, Joyce. And I think sometimes we allow situations to come into our life that ought not to be because of whatever thinking process that we have given it permission to come in. And fear is one of those doorways by which all of those crazy things come in. We had that, there's a story in the Bible about Job when every morning his kids would be partying, and every morning he would sacrifice and pray to God and kill all these animals and stuff like that. And then one day, all his kids died, all his animals disappeared, everything was gone. And then he sat down and he said, the thing that I have feared has come upon me. And so I learned that once I read that, I was like, whoa, okay. I learned that fear is this energy that caused me to bring things into my life. And so what a gift to hear that a family was brought into a situation and their parents never taught them about that entity, and that you guys were able to avoid several things because Job's life was a mess because of allowing fear to come in. And so that is a beautiful thing.
Fear and anger.
Yeah, anger.
Fear and anger. Anger is energy too. I just posted something on social media. This is another quote that I coined. Anger is energy. If used wisely, the anger will disappear and you'll be left with something positive. In other words, if you get mad at anybody or anything, you know, use that anger in a positive way.
Yeah.
And you'll be glad that you did, because the anger will be gone. And then you can clean out the refrigerator or reorganize your closet. This is what I said on social media. Reorganize your closet or do the garage, you know.
I love it.
Clean up the kitchen.
I love how you
use that energy.
Yeah, your simplicity of living is beautiful because
yeah.
it It helps you to manage things once you simplify it. And I love the fact that you do that in your book, in your speech, or in your living, and so that doesn't allow all the craziness to enter in, even to the space of not allowing anger to be used incorrectly. But when used correctly, it will produce much, you know. So,
I love it. Yeah, that's right. I have what I call an invisible shield, and I got two holes in there. I stick my arms out. Anything come at me, I grab it outside the shield, examine it, turn it all over, and look at it. Then I decide if I'm going to bring it inside my shield.
Yes, and that's it.
And then if I bring it in and I still examine it, I can throw it back out. Mm-hmm.
That is life, isn't it, Joyce? That power of choice that people tend to give up their choice. When you make a choice, means that you're taking ownership of your decision. And there's nothing more powerful than that for an individual to do, to operate in the power of choice instead of just drifting along with the wind that comes, you know, to and fro. But that power to say, as you said, examine it, examine those thoughts, examine those feelings, examine everything, become a warrior to protect your spirit, your soul, and your body and your mind.
There you go.
You know, protect yourself. Take these thoughts that are coming to you, these feelings that are coming to you, and like you said, turn them around, examine them, and then if they are, if it presents and it brings some type of good in your life, then you can bring it. If it doesn't, toss it away. Why even bother?
Thank you. Yeah. It's very simple to me.
people complicate things, I think, Joyce. They complicate this life.
Oh my God, do they ever.
Are you thinking of coming up with any other books that you have on the horizon in life right now, or are you just taking a break and enjoying?
The spirit has not moved me. I write when the spirit moves me.
Well, that's a good thing. Good time to start, isn't it? You know. So
yeah, but I don't think there's any more that I can say. You know, I got 10 out there.
I love that. Joyce, I want to thank you for coming by Threads of Enlightenment. I mean, this was very, very insightful. I wanted you to lay out your book, but I wanted people to see what was driving you. And that mission statement that you have is it drove you to produce these products by which people can partake of and free themselves from all of this cumbersomeness that is a part of the world and simplify their life a lot. Love how you simplify it. Joyce, I want to thank you again for coming to Threads of Enlightenment.
Ken, don't forget the books at goodshortbooks.com.
Oh, no, I'm not going to forget it. I'm going to put that in the show notes and all of it. And so
okay, I wanted to say it so they could hear it.
Yeah, you better say it.
Okay. Yeah, good. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. Right. I really enjoyed it.
Definitely.
And you understood, so good.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.